where and how are we indoctrinated mm-hmm. by the collective prevailing wisdom? And does that resonate with our soul? Or am I just parroting what I've been indoctrinated by my whole life about what mm-hmm. success means? And so being able to really have the sovereignty from these influences, even good influences, family, church, friends. But if I take a path that's not mine, I'm never going to rest. I might take a path that creates success that other people think they want, but I know when someone's aligned with their soul, when they're resting, because they're on their path, not someone else's.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Dr. Michael Brabant. He is the founder of Candor and Coherence, which is a lot of fun to say. Try it right now. He is a seasoned expert in catalyzing psychologically safe environments that lead to authentic and lasting transformation within leaders and within organizations. It's a twofer. With a rich background in clinical psychology, leadership development, and integrative practices, the big three, Michael brings a unique and precise and holistic approach to his consulting and teaching. His deep understanding and skillful facilitation of individual, relational, and collective dynamics allow him to guide teams towards greater coherence, trust, and performance. While strategies are shared, the potency of Michael's work is in his ability to create context where people can reveal what is real, honest, and true. And he's going to do it today. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
It's going to be a fun one. So tell me, Michael, what is on your mind?
Number one, I'm planning a wedding with my beloved. So that's on my mind right now. Details around that.
In the context, I don't know if I'm the wedding planner. I don't know if you want my advice on that.
But in the context of leadership, I'm always thinking how to invite people out of the shallows into the depths in a way that is confidence inducing. I think a lot of people can avoid facing certain things based on some fantasy that's infused with fear. And like, I can't face that, or I can't take that feedback, or I can't go in that direction because I don't know what's going to be there. And I'm always thinking about how to translate, especially those first few steps, into the depths that can feel exciting for the possibilities that could come, as opposed to scary of the unknown of what might be there.
Gotcha. Yeah, I could see where there's always that the fear of the unknown or just lacking certainty. What do you find is maybe the thinking or the prevailing wisdom you're butting up against? Because it sounds like you see this quite a lot, and I encounter some of this myself in my work. But what do you think that is that people have either interpreted from the world, or maybe somebody taught it to them to stay in the shallows?
I think that prevailing wisdom and the definitions of success, the definitions of productivity, oftentimes are overly emphasizing the external. So success, if somebody were to ask you if you were at a cocktail party and somebody's like, what do you think success is? And it's like freedom of money, freedom of time. They don't often think about, like, I go to sleep every night feeling at peace. I feel like if I were to die today, I'd feel fulfilled and wouldn't live with any regrets. Mm-hmm. Or my relationships are rich and connected and full of intimacy and health. So a lot of times these are more of the internal things, but if we look at the internal things, oftentimes they are components of a really healthy culture, which creates the value and the productivity and the efficacy of being able to hit outcomes. But if we just look on the outcomes, I think that's where we miss maybe even more than half of the pie, but really prevent the full human thriving that's possible. And so I think that overemphasis on the external and shallow definitions of success and productivity are some of the things that I think people can get stuck on.
I see. It sounds like what you're seeing is instead of interpreting the world and success from an outside in, you advocate from an inside out approach. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to put it. And I just think that along the lines of the external, it almost feels like I notice a lot of times people are selling themselves, especially really successful people. They're selling themselves on why they're successful and looking at, oh, look, but I hit my numbers and I've been married for 30 years, or my kids are at great colleges, or my team's hitting their goals year over year. And it's like, when I find somebody who's really successful, the metric that's most potent for me is, are they resting? Are they resting in their center, in their heart, or are they leaning forward towards the future or towards some sort of fabrication of reputation management, how you want me, how I want you to see me, versus I'm just resting in myself and I'm full and I move from fullness. To me, that's real success from an energetic standpoint.
Wow, I'm feeling called out. This is really good. I heard someone describe this once. I had been doing some work. It was really hard, some just internal work. And I had someone I really looked up to take me to lunch. And he said, you know, just lately you've seemed comfortable in your own skin. And that really stuck with me. And that is coming back to me. And I mention it because that sounds like what you're describing when you say you're at rest. Like you're just comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, I love that. And I think what I'm speaking to is maybe taking that one step further to have that resting or comfort in one's own skin as no longer context dependent. So it's this unconditional thing, whether I'm in a high stakes sales pitch, or I'm giving my kids a bath, or I'm wherever the case, or on a podcast hosting or being a guest.
Yeah.
Can I stay in the continuity of that comfort in my own skin, or am I required? Am I requiring some sort of external conditions, especially like as a leader? There's so much addressing issues. And am I as calm when everything's running smoothly as I am when things are hitting the fan and things aren't working out and my expectations are getting blown open? Can I still remain with that poise? And that's really what I help people do, is to come into that place of unconditional comfort in their own skin so that they can stay open, they can be vulnerable, they can be real at all times. And in that poise, be able to make the best decisions in times of challenge.
Mm-hmm. The way that you described it makes me think of the book, The Only Leaders Worth Following, which cites a research study, but just like what makes a leader effective. And the research showed out of the 8 characteristics that they whittled down, 2 of them accounted for 77%. And it was being inwardly sound and others focused. And that inwardly sound piece is coming to mind as you described that, which the part for me that I wrestle with, and I would imagine maybe the listener and some of your clients, if they're that high drive, whether they're an entrepreneur or just a leader in a large organization, a lot of times their drive is what got them to this place of an outwardly measurable, successful position, whatever that happens to be defined by. How are you walking people through? I'm not telling you to be lazy. I'm not telling you to be ineffective, but you could still accomplish things, do great things in the world and for your team or for your family without feeling that, like you were saying, that leaning forward or maybe that striving. So how do you help those driven leaders start to balance that out without telling them like, hey, every which way that you are right now, stop it?
It's a complex question with a complex answer. I'll start one direction and we'll go to a couple. The first thing that came to mind when you were asking that question is, what's the why behind your why? So there's this idea of like, what's your why? So I want to create generational wealth, or I want to impact lots of people, or whatever it is. And my question is, why? Is that your why? And there's a lot of sneaky motivations around people's big ambitions. And oftentimes those sneaky motivations are, I want to feel like I'm good enough. I want to feel worthy. I want to prove my mother, my father, fill in whatever perceived authority figure, wrong or right. It's not coming from this resting place. And for me, when someone's resting and comfortable in their own skin, they're internally validated. And that internal validations enable them to receive guidance, not guidance from the outside, but guidance from the inside. We could say that guidance is coming from one's soul, or from God, or from higher power. And when I'm coming from guidance, I'm being pulled. rather than pushing when I'm coming from my ego that's trying to prove or meet some unmet need. And I feel that guidance and that being pulled actually is the most efficient way to go about all the things that need to get done. So if I'm a busy entrepreneur and I already have a big team and I have these goals and I have stakeholders and I have all these things I need to address, I don't need to run around like a chicken with their head cut off putting out fires in order to be effective. That might be one mechanism of effectiveness, but what are the casualties and other side effects of operating that way? So I get things done. I hit my goals. How's my health? How's my sleep? How are my relationships? How's my relationship spiritually? And so what I'm saying is, if I come from my center and I'm be pulled forward through guidance, I'm using my intuition rather than just my intellect. And my intuition has information beyond just the data that I can see. And I can be guided and compelled in certain directions that don't necessarily make the same logical sense. But in retrospect, I'm like, wow, I can't believe I did it that way. But that was way more effective than if I would have done it the way that I'm used to. Yeah. So it takes some learning and reparative experiences to be like, I don't have to compulsively do in order to hit my goals. And so it's a paradigm shift, and it takes time.
Right. I think a lot of us are, I love the, with some why behind the why, right? My motivations are sneaky. And it sounds like a lot of the leaders you would encounter were probably asleep to that. It's not like we're hiding it. It's hidden from us even. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I love that. I think that you had said earlier, like prevailing wisdom. It's like, where does the prevailing wisdom come from? And I would say we would even, it might sound intense, but it's almost like, where and how are we indoctrinated by the collective prevailing wisdom? And does that resonate with our soul? Or am I just parroting what I've been indoctrinated by my whole life about what success means? And so being able to really have the sovereignty from these influences, even good influences, family, church, friends. But if I take a path that's not mine, I'm never going to rest. I might take a path that creates success that other people think they want, but I know success, and I know when someone's aligned with their soul, when they're resting, because they're on their path, not someone else's.
That's so good. I would encourage everybody rewind and listen to that 3 or 4 times till it sinks in. Because that's something I know I've been guilty of, is I just think, like, what's the biggest, baddest thing I could take on and crush and say, yeah, I did it. And I do get satisfaction from challenge, but I think most humans do. Like, if you look at Daniel Pink's book, Drive, like having some sort of challenge to make your way towards mastery, like that's always a good thing. But it gets back to the motivation behind the challenge. If the motivation is, if I conquer a bigger challenge, then suddenly I have more worth, then I'm not at rest and I'm pursuing what somebody else told me was a big achievement. But it may feel hollow when I reach that, whatever that success metric or milestone was.
Yeah, I love that.
Do you encounter people who they've achieved a lot, and maybe they were on another path and they just struggle to celebrate their successes, big and small?
I think that's one of the key things to look at, is how much celebration is there for those goals? And I think at a deeper level, this dichotomy or this gradient between self-judgment and self-encouragement. Yeah. And most of the time, when I'm trying to go after goals that feel like a push, there's a judgmental voice, an inner critic voice that's trying to catalyze the movement. But I find that encouragement is actually much more of a potent and sustainable fuel than is self-judgment, because self-judgment is, I'm just basically trying to get to zero. I'm trying to just shut that voice up so I can have a little bit of space. And when we think about like a little kid, of course, everybody has different parenting styles, but I think just thinking back to ourselves and our own journeys, when somebody challenged us and said, you can do better than that, like, I have bigger ideas and bigger goals for you, that could be motivating. But when somebody is just like, really, it's just saying, wow, the way that you showed up, how you were, what you did. I'm so proud of you. Really great work. Mm-hmm. And just the energetic feel of those two different fuels. Maybe somebody's going to like the former more than the latter, but my experience is that over time, the inner critic as fuel gets old and exhausting. And I like to think, you were saying earlier something that spawned something around like this idea of work-life balance. And I think that's actually a way to look at it that can be quite superficial and maybe like a misleading. If I'm not having balance between my work and my life, or my work is going great, but my family life sucks, am I really successful?
Right.
And so for me, it's less of a balance and more like, if I'm aligned, my experience when I'm working with people in my own life, if I'm aligned, everything is working. I'm successful everywhere because I'm not motivated at work in a way that drains my batteries and keeps me from being present at home or addressing the emotional issues I need. And it's not about being perfect, but it's more about life is one thing, and work and family and spirituality and everything is inside rather than these separate bubbles that are competing for my attention.
Yeah, I've heard the saying, like, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah.
And that just shows how you show up. I've heard a coach friend of mine has talked about, how do you bring those things into harmony? Mm. And that the notion of balance, which I think I attempted to subscribe to. I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds good. I have 5 kids and a wife. Like, I probably should subscribe to that. But I don't think it's so much about balance as it is just about harmony, and that the where is the energy, right? Because for some people, like, calling it quits right at 5, like, that may not be your jam. That may be somebody else's definition of success is, you know, I show up right on time, I leave right on time, and then I got all these other things to do. Instead of, how would I not, if nobody was watching, if nobody cared or would comment, including myself, how would I show up? And for me, and that's, thankfully, I have a very gracious wife, but I really love the work that I do and love working. And like today, my kids are home because they have an alternate school schedule. So I've gotten to just pop out in between calls and hang out with them for a little bit, and then I'm going to work. Now, I may work later than 5, but I've taken breaks throughout the day and like held my 3-year-old and talked with my other kids and checked on their homework and done other things. And that for me starts to bring more of a harmony than having the discrete buckets, I guess you would say.
Yeah, totally. And I think related to that for me, everybody's world is constantly giving them feedback. And my soon to be wife, she often says, like, people already know what's not aligned. It's like, if when I say things to people in a coaching context and I give them some feedback, it's not new information. They're subconsciously like, yeah, I know I work too much, or yeah, I know I'm not spending enough time with my kids, or yeah, I know I haven't gotten enough sleep. And the symptoms are there. And I think when productivity, they call workaholism in 12-step world the best dressed addiction. Because we get all of this benefit. We get money, we're providing for our family, we get these layers of significance. And I get high from being really productive. There's a high that comes from signing a big client or helping somebody with a breakthrough. And that's great. But it's easy to justify in my own mind. I used to work with really top sales professionals. And the thing about top sales professionals is they're really great at selling themselves, as well as selling other people. And I think every leader can be really good at selling themselves, justifying, rationalizing why what they're doing is aligned when it might not actually be. So if I'm getting this positive success through money and people are having breakthroughs and hitting goals, but my wife might not be saying, honey, I wish you could work less, but her energy is like, oh, okay, you have to work again? Okay, all right. So there's these subtle ways. And I know for me, like, my wife is so brilliant and so wise, and she can tell me feedback verbally and non-verbally. And it's my job to really listen, not just to the feelings that I'm, the metrics that I'm looking at, but the whole field of feedback around me. And if I can have the humility to not just rationalize why I'm doing what I'm doing, but to really be receptive to my wife, to my environment, to other people, to my body, that's going to help me come into greater harmony, as you said it, with my whole life.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think about that in terms of, I had set a goal with my therapist about just being more thoughtful. I was like, I move so fast through things that I feel like I'm not observing. Like, you just tell me exactly what you're saying. And then I miss the nonverbal. Like, there have been times where she's like, yeah, okay, like, you're going to work. And I might have like subconsciously picked up that the tone of her voice said she was not real happy about that. But I was like, if she's unhappy, she'll tell me and I just keep moving. But to slow down enough to be thoughtful, to process. And I see that in other leaders is it's, I don't want to say the tyranny of the urgent, although I certainly think that creeps in for all and comes for all of us, right? Like you said, putting out fires. But the, even if there's not a lot of activity going on, there's a lot up here. Like your mind can be very active, critic or no critic, but you're just processing like, I've got this and I've got this and I've got this and I've got this and I'm planning ahead for this. And I've joked with people. I said, my body is here, but the rest of me is somewhere 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years into the future. And it's made me wonder how many times have I missed what's in front of me because so much of my attention is focused in a time in the future. And I never catch up to it. It's always somewhere out there. Is that something that intersects with this being at rest and being at peace concept?
Yeah, absolutely. When you first asked the question, what's on your mind? My aspiration to answer that question is nothing. Nothing is on my mind. And I think for me, there's a difference between propelling, feeding, thinking versus a thought arising that I need to engage mentally to be present and effective in the moment. Because I'd imagine there's this idea, right? There's parts inside of all of us. And there's a part of me that thinks that it needs to forecast or plan or strategize for the future in order to feel safe. And for instance, like in this, you had given me some of these questions before. And I looked at it like 5 minutes before we started. And I was like, okay, well, you know, think about it. But I think if I were to write down answers to your questions beforehand, and they were beautiful answers, oh, there's this study and then there's this thing. And I like totally just like cited my answers.
Right.
And I was able to articulate it in a clear way. People's minds would be like, oh, that's a really good answer. But they wouldn't feel the transmission of my presence. They wouldn't actually feel the energy of me being in the moment with what is. And for me, that's a really core tenet of trustability. Like you had said, inwardly sound and outwardly focused or others focused. If I'm inwardly sound, I have space to be present with another. And if I'm not inwardly sound, but I'm trying to be other focused, I'm probably going to be codependent. I'm probably going to leave myself, abandon my needs, and try to help and focus on somebody else. So it's almost that inner soundness creates an emptiness of mind and presence, so that I can actually be intuitively present with the data in front of me.
Wow. That's part of what you said. I think you should probably record like your own meditation app. I think it'd be cool. Or see if somebody from Calm or Headspace would pick you up. But that was one of the things, because when I tried meditating for a while, especially with my first business, just because my mind would race. It was the first time being an entrepreneur. I didn't even plan on starting a business. My kids like to eat. I don't know. It's selfishness, I guess. And my brain would just be moving a million miles a minute and I needed to quiet down. So I like got the Headspace app. And one of the things during the like training, because I'd never really spent time in this sort of just like mind practicing mindfulness, was like thoughts can come and you can let them go. And it was like just clearing your mind. Like you said, what's on your mind? Nothing. Is trying to get to that state. And it was incredibly hard. I failed way more than I succeeded at that. But the times where I did get to that place, I did. I felt a calm. I felt at rest. I didn't feel anxious. because getting into one of the tools that I use called the Empowerment Dynamic, a guy who created it, David Emerson, he says that a lot of times wherever our focus is, if it's on problems versus outcomes, if it's on problems internally, we become very anxious and fearful. And our actions are really not to solve a problem, but to help minimize that anxiety and that fear. Mm. And like you were saying, is that if we forecast into the future, somehow that's protecting ourselves. The things that you're tackling are big things that people have taken decades to, they've built up personality, patterns, behaviors. And the thing I'd be curious about your perspective on how you help people unwind from that is it's actually kind of worked for them, right? Like by some outward metrics. That's what makes doing this sort of deep work so difficult with high achieving individuals is they're like, it's getting me stuff I want and a life I want and things I can be proud of. Why are you suggesting that I should do something differently? And I'm curious, how does that start to come to life? Have you found patterns in unwinding those things?
Yeah, totally. I will say I'm not into selling people on transformation. So usually there has to be some degree of humility and desire and negative mm-hmm. side effects that they're experiencing that mm-hmm. they want to address. It's not always like, I just want to be more effective. Usually there's some pain point. And any salesperson knows, you know, it's kind of like, what's the pain point and what's the vision, and to build mm-hmm. tension between those two places. And for me, the way that I break it down, if I'm talking to somebody for the first time, our thoughts, our emotions, our physical symptoms, heartburn, heart palpitations, anxiety, they all come from parts of us. So Michael Brabant, Kenny Lange,
you got it right on the first try, gold star.
We're not unitary constructs. We're made up of many different aspects of ourself. Mm-hmm. We have a part that really wants to work and really wants to go after it and grind. And another part that's exhausted is like, I'd rather just go to the beach, or I'd rather just take a drive or whatever it is. And so we have these different polarizations at different times. Or there's a part of us that wants to perform really well. And there's another part of us that thinks that I'm going to be found out as an imposter. And another part of me is like, no, I'm really confident. And it's like, whoa, yeah. Who's talking here? Right. So each of these thoughts have a part associated with it. And if a part is creating a thought, there's some unmet need usually. And so if I can, the three steps that I talk to people about is differentiating the different parts that are thinking and emoting and catalyzing physical sensations and symptoms in my being so they can become objective rather than subjective. Once these parts are objective, then I can be interrelating with them. I can hear their unmet needs. I can hear their desires. I can hear their fears. And then I can help meet those unmet needs. I can help, just like if I'm coaching somebody, but it's like coaching my own parts. And if I can help meet those unmet needs, assuage those fears, help them get their needs met in different ways, then they calm down. Mm-hmm. And they don't need to jump into my head and try to get my attention through neurotic ruminations. And so I've done a lot of meditation in my life for many years. And I find that if I'm just watching thoughts arise and then fall, that's great. But if there's a need inside of that thought, and I'm like thinking, it's like your daughter or your son coming in and being like, Daddy, I'm hungry. You're like, hungry. And then you don't actually get them food. You just let them go, oh, okay. And they're looking at you like, yeah, I'm hungry. And so it's like when I can address those unmet needs in my parts, then my mind empties and I'm at peace. And then those parts that are very sensitive, they trust me. They trust me as an inner leader that when they have a need, I'm going to be responsive. And so they don't have to take over the wheel of my awareness and have me running and running in my mind.
Wow. I like that. And it makes me think, would you say for leaders in particular, if you're leading people, I could make the case that at home, you show up as a leader.
Absolutely.
But in the context of a workplace or volunteer, whatever it is, would you say getting a hold of that, the being that inner leader, that needs to happen first, or at least you need to be on a path of working on that in order to better effectively lead those around you? Lead yourself before you really endeavor to lead others well.
Yeah, well, I think that the prevailing wisdom of leading yourself usually has to do with a form of discipline. Are you getting enough sleep? Are you taking care of yourself? Are you exercising? Are you planning your day well? And this is just a deeper depth of leading, because if I have judgments, for instance, about a part of me that is not able to stay focused and not able to like follow through and come to bring things to completion. So I have that judgment inside. But if I have somebody on my team that is exhibiting that symptom, that judgment is going to be projected onto them because I'm still doing it to myself. So the way that I lead myself is the way that I lead others. But what's really confusing is if I put on a mask that says I'm a very compassionate and loving and understanding leader, but somebody's exhibiting that part that I judge internally and my face says, oh, that's okay, let's work with it. But energetically, I'm actually judging that person. Mm-hmm. Then they're going to feel, okay, his words are saying this thing, but I actually don't feel safe. And I feel like he has an agenda to change me. And so that's where it gets really nuanced, because you can lead yourself through discipline and be effective, but are people really going to feel safe? Are people really going to trust you? Are people really going to take the risk to share the 10% that they're scared to share, which might be the key to the innovation of your product or service, mm-hmm. but that they're scared that they're going to be judged or ostracized by you as a leader if they share it.
And that's where, since you use the term psychological safety, which is something that I believe in our initial conversation, you and I discussed just our affinity for that concept and its impact. But Dr. Clark talks about psychological safety when it's at its highest levels, helps release discretionary effort from members of a team, which is where you see them move into like that high performance state. And that's part of what you talk about, guiding teams towards greater coherence, trust, and performance. So it's not just, hey, let's all feel better, but in the context of accomplishing something that actually can lead to that increase in performance.
Yeah. And I think it's from performance, from that place of psychological safety, will be much lower in burnout, and people will be excited to come together to innovate, because the highest level in Timothy Clark's model is challenger safety. So that is essentially, I feel safe enough to challenge the status quo, which mm-hmm. is what is the foundation for innovation, which is usually what separates certain companies from others within a market, because they're mm-hmm. doing something that not everybody's doing. And right. so it takes a lot of safety to come to that place. But if I'm able to challenge my boss and I know that they're going to reward me for my risk, I'm going to love coming to work. I'm going to keep like riding the edge of what's possible. And that's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be able to get feedback from my team, because we're all going to have that candor to be able to share what it is that's really going on, which is going to help me be a better person, which is going to help me at home, which is going to right. help us hit our goals, which is going to help us make more money, and is going to help me enjoy coming to work and feel like work is a transformative vehicle, not just a place to feed my family.
Yeah, man, I could keep digging into this for a while, and maybe we'll do that on a second episode. But Michael, if somebody's listening to this and they're thinking, hey, like this is resonating with me, I feel that lack of peace, I feel that lack of rest within myself. And maybe they're now reflecting like, oh, that's why when I had this conversation at work or at home, things went this way, even though I said the right things, I was giving off this energy. How could someone start to take a baby step towards this? Because this could sound really daunting, but something in the next 24 hours, not spending hardly any money or none at all, how could they start to walk towards that place of transformation that you've been describing?
When, as you've experienced and expressed today, when we stop doing and we stop focusing on external things, a lot of thoughts come up. And usually most people are always doing something which prevents the deeper roots of their motivations from surfacing in their awareness so that they can do something about it. They're just usually driven by that. So what I would suggest people do is to schedule 5 or 10 minutes every day to do nothing. Have a pad of paper next to them. And when a thought comes up, write it down. When a fear comes up, write it down. And by the end of that 10 minutes or by a week of doing that, you're going to see a fairly contained subset of repetitive thoughts and fears and emotions that then will be coming external to your subjective awareness. They're no longer me. They're these parts of me that are present. And then week two, and maybe this goes into the meditation course that I should create. Week two, take the part that's the loudest and just be with it as if you're watching a child coloring or drawing, and just be present and curious and supportive. And the more that relationship to these parts that are coming through neurotic thoughts are being present with, the more peace that's going to come over one's being, the more insight, the more intuition that someone's going to be able to have access to. And we'll, like I said, be in the beginning, there'll be more access to guidance that will give them ideas of how to continue deepening that path.
That's fantastic. And that's really challenging. Sounds like something I probably need to sit with and do myself. This is an incredible conversation. Thank you so much, Michael, for dropping some wisdom on us. If somebody wanted to know more about you, Candor and Coherence, or anything else in your work, where would you send them?
I'd send them to my site, candorandcoherence.com. And another thing that's there at the homepage, you'll be able to find a place to put in your email, and I'll send a free 5-6 email series of how to become a truly trustable leader. And that's really what I like to frame this as, of the pathway to become a truly trustable leader that creates psychological safety, that creates results, all those kind of things. So that's another thing that people can do for free in the next 24 hours to get some traction on this path.
Very nice. Love that. And then we also have your LinkedIn profile. So we'll link up all this in the show notes and make it easy for people. If you're driving, don't try to click on this while you're doing that. Wait till you get home or you're on a walk. So thank you so much. I look forward to having more conversations with you and gleaning new ideas and things for transformation. Listener, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. And if you made it this far, I assume that this was helpful to you. And that's called assuming the sale. I'm just kidding. But I hope that you got value out of this as well as it just enjoyed it overall. If you could like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is on your platform to this podcast, I would greatly appreciate it. I'm always looking for feedback. Leave your comments. I want to find guests and have conversations that are of value to you. But also, I know that there are other leaders just like you who are on their leadership journey, and your engagement with this content will allow them to stumble across it because of algorithms and all sorts of stuff. So it would really mean the world to me. And I'm sure somebody else would be really grateful to stumble across maybe this conversation that could help unlock their next steps. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.